The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 14th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Dr. Chris Richards, CEO of Plant Healthcare, discusses being awarded the London Stock Exchange's Green Economy Mark in recognition of his contribution to the global green economy. Also on the podcast, George Franceschetti, Executive Chairman of Alba Mineral Resources, announces the commencement of drilling operations at the Amitsoq Graphite Project in southern Greenland. And Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Coincilium, Tertiary Minerals and Metal NRG. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours and the top five most read RNSs. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of the content. In fact, there's an article on there, Zach Mears Trading Cafe, Bulletin Board Heroes, and he talks about there on the charting Arc Minerals, Braveheart, Bidstack, Kirias, EnQuest, Jubilee Metals, Cromec, Mode Global, Serum, Tilo Energy or Tilo Oil, and West Mount Energy. There's an article there, or video, I should say, Paul Hill, smiling as ever, Micro Cap Investing Masterclass with some of the big guys from the investing community, big names there. There's an article on Challenger Energy. There's one on Block Energy, Plan Healthcare as well. And of course, let's have a look at our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser there today is Cromec Group, up 7.7%, 16 pence. Biggest faller, Avacta Group, down 6.8%, 241. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Chris Richards, Chief Executive Officer of Plant Healthcare. That's PHC ticker. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Good morning to you.
Yeah, and it's an exciting day for you. You've just been awarded and achieved a Green Economy Mark from the London Stock Exchange, and we'll talk about that and the significance of that in a bit. Before we do, Chris, for people maybe, you know, unfamiliar with the company, just explain what Plant Healthcare is all about, if you could.
Sure. Plant Healthcare is a company which is focused on sustainable, cost-effective products to promote better food production, more sustainable food production. Think of the business in two halves. First, our commercial business, our existing sales, largely of a product called Harpin Alpha Beta, and our commercial business as of 2020 and this year and beyond is EBITDA positive and cash generative. And then beyond that, we have a very, very exciting pipeline of new products, which we call vaccines for plants, which help plants to grow better, to withstand disease, to withstand attack from certain pests, while being arguably the most sustainable products available in the market. We are launching our first vaccines for plants in the form of a product called Saori in Brazil in the second half of this year. So these are exciting times for plant healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the news. So you've achieved this green economy mark, and of course, with ESG, of course, huge momentum towards companies that are sustainable or green in some way. So what does this mean? You know, why is it significant for you then, Chris?
Well, for us, this is really important, Justin, because we talk about our positioning as a sustainable ag company, but it's all very well us talking about the sustainability. How on earth do we show external independent third-party validation of that claim? And the FTSE Russell Green Revenues Classification System is very well respected and widely used. And we're very, very pleased that we had discussion with them. They said, yeah, we think maybe you will qualify. We had to produce data on our sales and how we go about our business. We are really, really proud to be given that classification but by the LSE FTSE Russell system, and we will be able to put our green economy mark on our materials, on our website, and then investors can be confident that it's not just me as the CEO saying we're sustainable, but that we have solid third-party validation of our sustainability credentials.
Yeah, yeah, and we can see, you know, the power of nowadays, of course, of any company that achieved this, because it's not only private investors, of course, but funds and everyone are moving their money out of any kind of business that isn't sustainable and is detrimental to the environment, and moving that money into companies like yourselves, aren't they? So it's very significant from, you know, a money flow point of view, isn't it?
Well, we're really important. We're very proud of what we're doing here. Our products allow conventional and organic farmers to produce food in a more sustainable manner, to use less chemical to achieve the same effects, to produce bigger crops and better quality food without using toxic agrochemicals. And I think that's a huge endeavor. And it's really exciting for us that the Green Economy Mark provides that external validation for us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's talk about you know, current business and trading. I mean, you mentioned in your summary and outlook in your final results that you're well positioned for growth in 2021 in your core markets, gaining traction. How is it going? Is it going to plan?
Absolutely, Justin. We're having the year has got off to a really good start. Not everywhere, I have to say, but let's a quick cook's tour of the world. Mm-hmm. The U.S. is going really, really well. Both corn, which is supported by good commodity prices, and product adoption of our product in corn is going really well. We expect to double sales in corn again this year, as we did last year. In fruits and vegetables in the States, again, sales are very buoyant and going very well. And also in Europe, we've had a terrific season in spring season in Europe. It's been a bit more mixed elsewhere. Brazil, there's been a severe drought. And very sadly, COVID-19 continues to be a major problem in Brazil, which makes it a little bit more difficult for us to visit farms and promote our products. So our sugarcane business is tracking a little bit behind plan. And Mexico's had some issues as well, principally with the prices of export vegetables to the U.S. But overall, we're pleased with the way the year is shaping up so far. We're on track to meet market expectations for the full year. And at the end of July, we'll be updating the market on our first half performance with a trading statement.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Chris, as always on the podcast, I like to highlight the top five most followed companies on the platform at Vox here. So if you want to try and get in on that top five, give, you know, investors, people listening right now, three reasons why they should hit that follow button and add plant healthcare to their watch list, please.
Absolutely. Sustainability. Sustainable agriculture. We all need to eat. We don't have to eat rubbish. We need to improve the sustainability of agriculture, and that's our endeavor. That's what we're trying to do. Secondly, we're showing accelerating revenue growth in the short term in 21-22 as we start taking the company towards cash positive. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, our vaccines for plants. We have such an exciting pipeline of products. We're targeting market opportunities of more than $5 billion. So we're very, very excited about the way that pipeline of new products is developing. Our first launch this year and further launches in subsequent years.
Excellent stuff. Chris, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Look forward to that. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Franceschides, Executive Chairman of Alba Mineral Resources, ALBA ticker. George, thanks for joining me.
Justin, nice to speak to you again.
Yeah, and we often talk, and of course we've got different projects going on. Today you've announced the commencement of drilling operations at the Amitsoq Graphite Project in southern Greenland, and we'll talk about that and things related in a bit. But as always, just give us an overview of your portfolio there, George, if you could, for people not familiar.
Yeah, so Alba Mineral Resources, it's a mining company. We also have oil and gas investments, but our main staple and focus is on mining. We've got some, we look often for brownfield assets, so assets that have been in production before or close to a producing asset. So Clogau and Gwynfynnydd are Welsh gold mines. We're obviously in production for many, many decades, and we are aiming to bring them back into production. Clogau is first off the cab off the rank, very much so. And then we will be pushing with Gwynfynnydd as well. So so that's our Welsh Gold focus, which we've talked about, I'm sure, many times in the past. And we've got an Irish-based metals project. We've got Horse Hill, investment in Horse Hill in Surrey, which is an oil and gas investment. And then we've got four pretty exciting projects in Greenland, which are... two have got resources on them. One we hope will have a resource very shortly, which we're, I'm sure, about to speak about, which is Amitsoq. And so, you know, it's a portfolio of high value, high grade assets, and often with a production history.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to start drilling here at Amitsoq. It's the graphite deposit. So what do you know about it? And tell us about what you're going to be doing here.
Yeah, so, well, we've done a lot of work with Amitsoq over the last 4 years or so that we've had it. We know it's very high grade. It's probably the highest average grades of any graphite project in the world. Amitsoq Island deposit is 28.7% TGC, which is the graphitic carbon. Kallak, which is a discovery that we made across on the mainland part of our license, is 25.6% average. And those are very, very high, exceptionally high grades, average grades. I mean, there are actually some grades much higher than that, but I'm talking averages. And then we've done a lot of test work on it. So we know that it can be, it's suitable for high purity spherical graphite, which is the stuff you need in a lithium ion battery. Now, the lithium ion battery market is exploding, and the graphs and all the forecasts for demand for graphite are, you know, really, really strong. And it's not all graphite, so not all graphite is made is equal, as it were. Ours certainly is amenable to that market, that burgeoning and ever-increasing market, but not every graphite project is. So we're in a very good shape. What we need to do is to drill a resource. We know there's a heck of a lot of graphite there, a lot of it just in outcrops to surface. I've sent some, I've included some photos in today's RNS about Amitsoq drilling, and I've got some others, fantastic videos and photos, which we'll be sharing with everybody in the next day or and coming days, so people can see the scale of the exercise and the scale of the deposit and the potential scale of the deposit that we're drilling. So a lot of it, so a lot of that graphite, you can actually see it, it's at surface. Of course, some of it is not, so that's why we're drilling it. And we're just trying to get a resource out of it. And so the next 6 weeks is, you know, going to be full-on drilling at Amitsoq.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, exciting stuff. And say, like you say, it's, let's be honest, I've never known. I've talked about trends, but, you know, if you go back, and I suppose the internet, the birth of the internet was a trend probably the same size as the EV or alternative energy, renewable energy sort of field right now, because it's huge, isn't it? I mean, every government, or pretty much most of the governments around the world, or big governments in the first world, I've put, you know, disclaimers down that they're not going to be selling oil and gas, you know, engines beyond a certain date. So it's a huge, massive uplift, isn't it, needed? And there's commodities needed for those batteries. A massive amount of demand going to be happening, isn't it, you know?
It really is. It really is. And, I mean, at the moment, just so you understand, I mean, you know, in terms of some of those forecasts, I mean, at the moment, graphite's probably a 200,000 tonne per annum out of a sort of 800,000 ton overall graphite market. People like Benchmark Minerals, who are one of the main analysts in this field, are saying, you know, they expect by the end of this decade that graphite will be a 3 million ton per annum market for graphite, sorry, for lithium ion batteries out of 4 million tons. So it'll go from something from 10 to 15% of the overall graphite market to being a 75% share of a much bigger demand for graphite. So, you know, we're in the right space. The estimates, and I knew this was going to happen. It's the same for everything: lithium, cobalt, nickel, graphite. You know, the reality is that there isn't enough supply for the massive demand that's coming on stream, and really quickly, as you've seen. I mean, every single car company is jumping on the bandwagon. Some are phasing out combustion engines completely, and very soon everyone is jumping on this, and you know, every day you see a new model coming out, so it's going to be huge.
And
over, we're definitely in the right space
there. Yeah, absolutely. And over what period of time will you be drilling these 15 holes then, George? How long will it take?
Next 5 or 6 weeks, Justin, I'd say. And then there'll be a pause, and then we will start drilling at Thule Black Sands. So we we don't rest on our laurels. We're going to be doing either ends of Greenland, which is the biggest island, non-continental island in the world. Mm. We're going to be drilling at either ends of that massive country of Greenland. So this summer, so it's very exciting.
Yeah. Now, back on the 20th, you announced an RNS there about a Greenland spin-out IPO, and you said in that RNS, after assessing all the alternatives, the ALBA board has determined the optimal way to unlock real and sustained value in our asset portfolio is to, in effect, the divestment of our Greenland assets into a new Greenland-focused AIM-quoted company. Now, I'm sure some people are thinking, why are you selling that? If it's worth a lot of money in the future, why are you selling? So essentially, can you explain that? Because, of course, people now think you're probably getting rid of that when you're not.
No. We're not getting rid of anything at all. What we're doing is unlocking value in, I mean, I totally understand the question, but we're unlocking value in our portfolio of assets. I mean, we are capped at whatever we are, you know, at the moment, around 15 million, 16 million quid. Mm. I don't think that, and the board doesn't think that a lot of our assets are getting proper value for what they are and the stage of their development and their massive potential. And that goes very much for Greenland. A lot of the share price appreciation we've seen in ALBA in the last year was to do with our Welsh gold. And we are still pushing forward with that. And there'll be more news out on that as well in the next little while. So, you know, that is going to remain a key focus. Gold is a very good place to be in, and certainly gold that is not just some exploration project, but is actually a development project that is brownfield that we want to get back into production. You know, we couldn't be better in a better shape than that. Mm. But, you know, these Greenland assets are massively undervalued, I would say, in our portfolio. How do we unlock that value? And how do we protect ALBA shareholders from, you know, what, trying to proceed and progress 6, 7, 8 projects through to production? You know, diversification and having a good portfolio of diversified assets makes a lot of sense when you're a junior explorer. But when you want to go into development, Justin, you have to focus. Mm. You know, you have to focus on one, at most, two projects. You cannot be, as a junior, doing two Welsh gold projects, an Irish base metals project, and four projects in Greenland, three of which have the potential to go into development at least. The fourth is early stage, Inglefield. So, you know, it's just not feasible. It makes sense to be diverse. Did not want to be a one asset company. We've got some very strong assets, but how do we unlock that value? We're spinning out Greenland into a new vehicle, and ALBA will be the major shareholder of that vehicle. That vehicle will then have a listing on AIM. It will have its own market cap, and the market will set the value for Greenland. And ALBA will get massive upside benefit from that as a major shareholder. Our assets in Greenland are currently on our balance sheet for 2 million quid or something like that. You know, we're expecting and hoping to get a much bigger uplift on valuation once those Greenland assets, with a very, very strong Greenland focused management team, are in there in the new co, pushing those projects forward to development. So it is a win-win for ALBA shareholders. There is no dilution. Once those assets are divested, ALBA will not have to fund them anymore. We will simply take the upside from that transaction, from those assets going through to development. So I hope that I've sort of given you a good idea of how energized we are about the transaction and the benefits for ALBA shareholders. And I appreciate that that may not be obvious to start with, but I hope that I've sort of explained that to you.
Yeah, exactly. And that in itself, you know, those Greenland assets then will attract a new investor, won't they? Those kind of people who are just aiming at that kind of investment, that kind of sector. Attract new money, I suppose, won't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. And there are people who've been interested in our Greenland assets in the past, but they don't understand Welsh gold, or they don't understand oil and gas in the Weald Basin. As I say, it is a very good thing to be diversified when you are coming up through the ranks. But when you want to get that development capital in, as you just said, people need to understand what it is that you are, and you need to have a focus. So the Greenland Co. Will have a Greenland focus on some very strong assets, which we're drilling now. We couldn't give Greenland Co. a better start to life than listing with two drilling projects either under in progress or completed. So, you know, so that you're absolutely right. And then there are people who would love to invest in Greenland but don't understand the rest of it. So it makes perfect sense. And the same goes for Wales. And our Irish-based metals and our wholesale asset will be a UK and Irish-focused vehicle at Alba with a significant major stake in a Greenland company that we don't have to fund anymore. So it makes perfect sense for both sides of the ledger. And they will be open then for investors who really like one or either of those sets of assets and want to get involved in Greenland, of which there are many people, including funds and growth funds, sovereign wealth funds, and the rest of it. Greenland is a space that is only going to go in one direction in the next decade. And, you know, this is going to unlock that value for us and for our shareholders.
Yeah, yeah. And as far as, I mean, is it confirmed yet? Or are you still, I mean, and if it is, how long would that take to do the IPO?
It's in process. Obviously, there are things that need to be done, resolved. It needs to be approved by the regulators, and we need to go through all of that process. That's a normal standard process for AIM. It is, you know, it's in progress. A lot of work's been done, and a lot of work is ongoing as we speak. And as soon as I can give an idea on timing, I will. But because it's a sort of, you know, it's a sensitive transaction, and it is subject to regulatory oversight. So, you know, we aren't able to say a lot more than I've said to date. But as soon as we can, as soon as they let me off the leash, I will come back and tell you a heck of a lot more about the detail, who's on the board and where it's going, and you know, a lot more about the new co. We are going to be, as Alba, very heavily involved in giving that birth and then looking after it in the months and years to come. It is not something that we are letting go of. It is something that we are
investing in.
We're investing in, and we're creating value in, and we're going to help to push it forward very closely.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, let's get to the three reasons then. George, as always, people liking the sound of this, but not yet following the story. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Alba Mineral Resources to their watchlist, please.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, we, as you've probably worked out, we're a very busy company. We like to be nimble, look for assets that have value, that are, you know, that are maybe in the you know, not the doldrums, but maybe somewhat dormant, like our gold assets that we're bringing back to life. And we do work, you know, we don't sit around. It's not an investment portfolio or a lifestyle company. We're drilling at surface and underground at Clogai at the moment, all at the same time. And we are looking to dewater a major shaft there at Clogai to get into that. So, you know, and we are drilling at Amitsoq as of today. And we will be drilling at Tule Black Sands as of next month. We do not rest on our laurels. That is all about getting value into these assets to increase our share price and see value accretion for shareholders. That is all that we think about, and that's all that we do. And that might have been two or three reasons, Justin, I'm not sure, but I should probably end there.
Yeah, excellent stuff, George. Good to chat to you, and we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Lovely. Thanks, Justin. Thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications. All right, Al.
Very good morning, Jess. Thank God the summer's here. Barbecues all weekend.
Hot, isn't it?
Yeah, it was hot. It was hot, but you know, it was great to watch yesterday. I had my son and his wife and my son-in-law and my daughter who are living here, and we had a big barbecue and watched the England game. So it was great. Really good.
Yeah, my sort of in-laws came down because my father-in-law's good at DIY. I'm dreadful at DIY. I get to the point where now, if the wife asks me to do something, I want to, but I just say, no, listen, I can't. There's no point. I hate doing it. I get it wrong. You have to hire someone else to do it. So, but he came down with their mother-in-law, and they watched the game at a barbecue as well. But I was standing at the barbecue with the sun on me next to the barbecue, thinking, God, this is hot. I feel sorry for chefs or cooks who have to work in this kind of weather. It's so hot, and You know, but there are jobs. I remember on the radio, actually, we used to do the what's the worst jobs you can have in this weather? And people, one of the ones was like cooking in a very busy kitchen when there's no air conditioning in there, you know. And I think that is hard work, isn't it, in this weather? But
It is. It's a pressure cooker in every sense of the word, because you've got the pressure of getting the food ready, but you're working in temperatures that would, it would otherwise be deemed completely,
Think of sweat, you know. I often think of sweat on the food.
Well, this is it. Yeah, the chef's hot. He's sweating away and preparing these marvelous dishes. But surely he's leaning over them. You know,
you don't have to add any more salt on that because I've sweated all over it. It's much saltier than it is.
with a chef's sweat garnish.
lovely. That's how you market it, I suppose. Right, let's get on to stocks, Al. What's happening? FTSE's doing very well. The big caps, smaller caps are lagging a bit. I often find that, I don't know if you've noticed this, but sometimes when you have the big caps hitting highs, it's almost like one of those champagne towers where liquidity sort of seeps down to the lower sort of level of the market. So it takes a while sometimes, but I think it's going to happen. And we've had this sort of delay, you know, the four-week delay. It's not a huge, I mean, certain businesses are going to suffer, but I did see a couple of tweets saying, listen, a month isn't going to make a big difference now, apart from to people's mental health and businesses. So this delay, maybe, I don't know how effective it will be. And I suppose they can still get a lot of vaccinations done in a month, can't they? So maybe that will help, you know.
I think they can. And I think also there's the mindset we've come this far. And, let's face it, I think despite, you know, despite everything, we've made a lot of progress with the vaccinations. So many people vaccinated, you know, compared to where our European counterparts are, you know, we are way ahead of the game. So I think, you know, the government have done a good job in that regard. So 4 more weeks, if we can get 70 millions more vaccinated, it's going to keep people out of hospital. It's going to keep things under control. And we've come this far, so what's another 4 weeks?
In fact, it can do a lot, actually. They're doing, I just look in on the website here. So what was the last day? First doses on the 12th of June, they did 254,000 in one day, and second doses 320,000. So you extrapolate that across a month, that's a lot of people, actually, isn't it? So that extra protection hopefully will suppress this Delta variant, you know, but there we are. But they're breaking the link. I mean, if you look at the healthcare and the amount of people in hospital now, and it's someone did say there's 170 odd hospitals, I think, in the UK. And last week, it ticked up a little to people in hospital to 173. And so if you work it out, that's pretty much there's more hospitals than people, you know, being admitted with COVID on a daily basis. Yep. So it's not a lot. But I mean, the NHS chief saying the link has been broken between, you know, deaths and serious hospitalisations and cases. Because, of course, cases are going to rise. We're going to have that. But if you're vaccinated, double jabbed, it's fine, you know. And we're testing more as well.
That's the thing, and I think the efficacy of the jabs, I think Pfizer's at 90%, isn't it? And AstraZeneca is at about 60 to 70%, so not sure about Moderna, but it means that the percentage of the population that are going to get it will be reduced because they have more resistance. So, another 4 weeks might just be that tipping point that ensures that we don't need any future lockdowns. And I think that's the whole thing behind all this. If we can avoid any future lockdowns, then we can get back to normal. And then when you have your flu jab at the end of the year, you'll get your COVID jab as well, and it'll be treated in the same way as flu, God willing.
So, absolutely. I mean, I'm one of these people who's been banging the drum for opening the economy, but I think just an extra 4 weeks, you know, to get over this spike in the Delta variant, hopefully vaccinate more. I'm happy, you know. I'm more than happy if that's to happen, really. I know some people just bang the drum relentlessly, don't they? It's mainly for social media likes and follows. And it seems to be in society today, really at extremes. There's no middle ground. There's no, you know, either you one way or the other way, isn't it? That's what attracts attention. But in actual fact, you can say, okay, let's give it an extra month. And people will be, yes, but they'll extend it by another month then. And all the conspiracy theorist thing is just the government's excuse. But I don't think it is. Obviously, you can say the stats are made up. But if you look at the stats, they seem to be rising a little bit. So it's better to be safe than sorry, I think, for 4 weeks, you know. So
Anyway, exactly. No
chance. Let's look at what stocks, Al, what are you looking at? First one up. What's off the
First one up, Coincilium. Coincilium is dual listed, of course, on Aquis, Epic Code Coin, C-O-I-N, and also on the OTC venture market in the US. C-I-N-G-F is the Epic Code over there. And, of course, very quick bit of history. Coincilium was the first blockchain and open finance venture builder to list on block to list in 2015 on Aquis. It's evolved constantly since that point, from being an investor into and support of blockchain companies into a developer and a venture builder in the open finance space that it is today. So the company is currently, as I say, listed on the Aquis exchange, giving the market cap of just under 14 million as we speak. The mid price is 8p, and the shares have traded as high as 34p on the year on the news of the various contracts it's engaged in and is undertaking. The most high profile one recently, of course, was a joint venture with the Gibraltar Post Office to market and sell a limited edition postage stamp with an NFT counterpart. I have my stamps here. I participated, and I'm going to open my wax wallet, and I'm going to My wax wallet. That's right. It's a wax wallet. Will hold the NFT counterpart of the stamp, and I'm going to shortly. Later on today, I'm going to go through the process and get the NFT set up as well. So
be careful in this heat with that wax wallet, Al, because maybe
it could melt. Yes, that's right. I've got to be careful with the wax wallet in this weather. So I'll keep it in the shade. I'll keep the fan on in the corner. You know, keep some air moving past.
Did part of you think though? I mean, I've got a little bit of money in crypto. In sort of in Ethereum, Cardano, and block and Bitcoin, just bought on the sell-off recently. But part of me still thinks, you know, it needs. I don't know what. I'm a bit skeptical. I understand. I'm there's first of all the tech. I'm a great believer in that tech. I think it's going to work out, of course. But I just think the prices, the valuations, are a bit bonkers. And I don't know if it's just me. And if you look at all sort of previous, explosions or bubbles sort of popped. It's always been this sort of mass of people sort of blinded by the fact that there's no way this is not going to be the future, you know. But I believe it will be the future. But like I said, with the internet, the last big sort of bubble we had pop was the internet, where let's be honest, the internet is now. It's the future. We are all online. Everyone's online. It's like a utility. But, very few of those internet companies that popped back then are around now. You know, I'm thinking that still needs to happen in this space, you know, because there's so many coins popping up. I still think we need that realization that, not everyone is a winner. Because I remember back then, do you remember when, companies just changed their name to .com, AIM companies or shell companies, and they double overnight. And that's happening now. People are doing ICOs, and just because they become, a coin, they go nuts, and the valuations are crazy. I just think we need that sort of realistic valuation time, who's going to be the winner, who's not. They're not all going to be winners, you know.
That's got to filter out. You're absolutely right. But I had a chat with the exec chairman, Malcolm Pelly, recently, and he said, really, this space, the crypto space, but more so the NFT space, it's at the evolutionary equivalent of where the internet was when we had dial-up modems. Do you remember those? You'd sort of dial up and get on online, and there'd be that whistling sound for a while, and then all of a sudden, click, you're online. But it was incredibly slow, and that's really where the NFT space is right now. Aside from,
he would say that though, wouldn't he?
Well, he would, yeah, he would, but he's actually right, because they've just published it's actually through Novus Communications. There is if you go to our Twitter account, and that's either on NovusComs or Brand UK or my own personal one, Alan_Green, you'll find a link to an investor Q&A, which is all about questions being asked by investors via email to the Coincilium and Nifty Labs team about the NFT space. And it's about how the open finance, how open finance differs from decentralized finance. What is a token bridge? There's RSK building a token bridge in order that it can facilitate smart contracts into Bitcoin to enable people to buy NFTs using that bridge on the Bitcoin platform. And also there are questions about the minting process for an NFT. So when you get an NFT, what's the minting process? What does it go through to get online and to be launched? And then there are the issues that you and I have discussed, you know, many times when we've looked at this, which is, of course, security. So firstly, there's the provenance of an NFT. And, of course, Nifty Labs have launched the Nifty Scanner, which is it sits alongside the NFT and it indicates how solid the provenance and the traceability of that NFT is throughout its life, all the way through to where it's to where it's actually housed or which server it's on. And then, of course, there's the other issue with that NFT. What happens if the NFT that server is hosted on goes offline? So there are all sorts of issues surrounding that. And then there's the newest, probably the most recent development in NFTs, and that's royalty codes. So, of course, when you maybe purchase something or when you have something that has an NFT counterpart, how is that royalty traced? So as with an artist, you bought the Kings of Leon album, the NFT album, that NFT, of course, then traces the royalty back to the Kings of Leon, the band that made the album, it'll be like that through his lifetime. So if you eventually sold that NFT on, that royalty code within the NFT would trace it all the way back. So it's all of these issues that we are – it's all new stuff. We're starting to understand it. On the back of that Coincilium announced a short while ago that they were building and commissioning an NFT marketplace, which is kind of like a Web.3 for the marketplace, because so many of the issues that there are issues with the fact, a lot of people are saying it seems very fragmented. You've got to go through an awful lot of process before you actually get to complete your NFT purchase. And I think this is a key issue for a lot of people wanting to get involved in it, and one which may actually be putting a lot of people off from getting involved. It's just the fact you've got to go through a seemingly convoluted process with setting up wallets and so on, and there's nothing seamless about it. So the new platform that is being launched by Coincilium will deal with a lot of these issues and bring a lot of those issues together. But we'll hear more about that from Malcolm and the team as they go forward. But Coincilium were saying they are very much the picks and shovels business for blockchain Web3. They're at a fascinating juncture, and I think if you're looking at an investment proposition in this space, I think arguably Coincilium have a better range of tools and assets at their disposal than a lot of the other companies I can mention.
And there's lots of companies to mention.
There's lots of companies to mention. There are indeed, yes. And of course, they've just raised just over £1 million to accelerate the growth in that. And they've put £250,000 already into this new NFT marketplace. So, yeah, exciting times ahead.
Marvellous. What's next, Neil?
Okay, into mining now. Want to talk about Tertiary Minerals, which, of course, is a small mining company we have spoken about previously. Used to be in Fluorspar. They are no longer in Fluorspar. They have
They're not in at all, are they now? Out of it completely?
They have assets. They have assets in Fluorspar, but those assets are dormant. So, if there were a sudden requirement or a sudden upswing, or there were the opportunity to develop possibly the Storuman project or the Lasserdalen project in Norway, then of course that may well come to the fore again. But in terms of its valuation, those are assets still held by the company, but there's no work being done to develop those assets at the moment, because the marketplace isn't there for it. That said, they do still have an agreement with the German commodity giant Posel. So if there were developments in that area, then Posel have agreed to buy any Fluorspar that's produced by either of the projects. But that's a dormant part of it at the moment. As we know, they have a royalty on a gold project in Finland, which is currently being developed by Orion Resources, and that probably adds a million or two to the market capitalization. Orion, of course, part owned by Kinross Gold, and they purchased the asset from Tertiary in 2017, and Tertiary have an net smelter royalty, and also. Orion, if the project develops, Orion can purchase 50% of that net smelter royalty for $1 million at any time prior to the work starting on the mine. So that drilling is underway there. They've had great grades, so we expect to hear more from that over the summer. But as you know, Tertiary have a raft of assets of their own in Nevada. They have the Pyramid Gold and Silver Project, the Paymaster Polymetallic Project, the Mount Tobin Silver Project. They have the Brunton Pass Copper Project that was acquired earlier this year, and also the Lucky Copper Project as well. Lucky Copper Project, yeah. Each of these projects are at various stages of development in terms of aeromag surveys, soil sampling, and so on. But the company announced last week that assay results from the Pyramid Gold and Silver Project showed a thick zone of open-ended silver mineralization and, some pretty good grades, 45.72 metres or 61 grams per tonne. And 14 meters at 146 grams per ton, which is pretty impressive stuff. And one 3 meter section where the grading was as high as 260 grams per ton. And this was resulting from the exploration undertaken over the past year. This soil anomaly reflects a significant and thick. Quote unquote from the RNS, with a silver mineralization in situ that includes a high grade zone and a bulk tonnage target. So further work is being undertaken there, but that's a very exciting find. And of course, the next steps could involve a joint venture, may involve a go it alone, who knows. But either way, it made the share price, as you can imagine, perk up a bit. Shares currently trading at 0.35p, giving it a market cap of just over 4 million. So, with that raft of projects in Nevada, the dormant Fluorspar assets, and the Finland gold assets, Tertiary is still, compared to its peer group, very undervalued indeed. And I think it'll just take some more news from the Pyramid project to possibly push this, as high as a penny, which is probably where it should be now.
A penny, eh? Ooh.
But that's just my opinion. Yep.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm talking about NFTs, right? So I logged into that OpenSea site, where I think I held my Kings of Leon NFT. I can't even find it. I don't know what's going on there. Trading history, nothing there, nothing there. Where the heck is it? I have no idea where it is.
Just, I wish I could help you. I really do. I think some people are logging into this and just trying it out. I mean, my efforts with my wax wallet, if it doesn't melt in the sun later on today, will be just to secure the NFT counterpart to the stamp. But you see, OpenSea.
It's a different world, isn't it? I'd have, what you're talking about there, I literally have no idea what's going on.
I know. No, it does feel that way. But the certainly OpenSea. I mean, if you think of it in terms of, you know, the initial iteration of a platform for the NFT marketplace, Web's OpenSea was that platform with all its imperfections, with all its difficulties, the challenges to use, and you know, the people at are engaged with and have worked with it from day one, they're fine with it. But it's very difficult for somebody like you and I just to say, right, I'm going to buy an NFT, I'll hold it in there, or let's go in and open it and buy it and all the rest of it. Oh, where is it? And that's I think is the challenge. You know, it's not, if you've got a Coinbase account holding cryptocurrency, if you've got a, say, a Mode account holding cryptocurrency, you know, you just click the icon on your phone and boom, you're straight in, you know exactly where you are. But it's not straightforward with the with OpenSea at the moment. So as I say, the Coinsilium NFT marketplace will resolve a lot of those issues that and challenges that users currently face.
Yeah, I've no idea where it is. Maybe I did have it, but I have no idea if it's gone. Cool. All right, so what's next, Al?
Okay, so finally we're looking at Metal NRG, which MNRG is the Epic Codes, and the currently has a market cap of 5.3 million. Shares are traded as high as 1.45p on the year, as low as 0.42, currently at 0.56. And Metal NRG has a range of assets, quite a diverse range of assets. In terms of direct investments, it has an investment in the Gold Ridge project in Arizona, which is located on the Dos Cabezos Mountains in Arizona, and the Gold Ridge project entails a series of historic gold mines, three historic gold mines, and a big area of tailings, where recent sampling has revealed gold grades of 0.05 grams to 6.5 grams per ton across the average, both within the mines and within the tailings, and obviously with that we've seen so much higher grades. At the end of May, SRK Exploration undertook a review where they said there's potential for discovery of further mineralization, structured a recommended work program, and stated their belief that the data that was there historically confirmed presence of what they thought was a bigger and more widespread system. But that obviously is subject to further work confirming that. So we then turn everything on its head and we come back to Brit NRG, which is based in Lincolnshire. This is also a project owned by Metal Energy, and this is onshore oil and gas exploration. Three producing licenses in the area. Now, of course, you'll have heard me speak about Union Jack Oil and the team there. This is central Lincolnshire as opposed to East Lincs and Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. But there are three wells producing 55 barrels a day and 40 barrels a day, respectively. And there is the site that the company are working on. They plan to develop the site using modern seismic and geology methods, which aren't currently in use by the site operator. The oil that has been taken from the site is being processed at the Immingham refinery, which is also where Union Jack, Rathal Energy, and Rebold Resources joint venture oil is being produced. That's the Brit NRG element of the offering. Then we come to the Ektek joint venture. Of course, Ektek are a developer of gasification of waste matter. There are a number of shovel-ready projects that the group are looking at in UK and Europe, and they announced in May the acquisition and recommissioning of a of a straw pellet and wood chips plant in Italy. MNRG are holding 26.6% of that, are investing €700,000, and they expect it, once it's up and running, to generate EBITDA of €750,000 per annum. So, so again, a broad spread of investments on offer by the company. Several indirect investments as well, which are in the same way as Tertiary Minerals, has dormant assets with the fluorspar assets. There are dormant assets in Kyrgyzstan and also in Tanzania, where money has been invested and a stake is held in the assets there, which could come back to life at some point. Just a word on the board. Rolf Gerritsen, chief exec, 30 years experience, and he's well known within the industry. And Christian Schaffelisky, of course, involved as a non-exec director, well known in his involvement with Eurasia Mining, Kibo, Plenum Natural Resources, and so on. A gentleman by the name of Pier Paolo Rocco has been is on the board. He's looking after the oil production side of the business with Brit NRG, has a background in Total, Eni, and Shell. So, as I say, there's a good spread of assets there, a broad spread of exposure to very different markets indeed. And I think any one of those moves along and marks a material development, we're going to see a consequential movement in the share price also.
What's your position there, Al? Do you hold any?
No, I hold stock in the other two companies, but Metal Energy I have looked at for some time. I don't hold stock in them currently, but I hold stock in Tertiary, and we hold stock in Coin Selim as well.
Okay, how many stocks do you hold now?
Well, me personally, I'm still at about 20, but we have a lot of interest, through through the companies we work with. So that's it varies. Okay. But I'd say probably an average of 20 at any one time.
Okay, on a personal level, what percentage of your portfolio right now would you say is cash?
I have a very small amount of cash, although I will be going to a bit more cash, but I'm going to put some more into my ISA, and then I have a couple of funds that have done quite well, so I will probably be topping up in those within the ISA.
The ISA, eh? Is that the same as ISA?
ISA, yeah.
Okay. You say ISA, I say ISA. Let's call the whole thing off.
ISA, yeah, let's call the whole thing off. No, yeah, I think if investors can use the ISA as a shelter and invest in in a mix of stocks and funds. I mean, we hear a lot of people who've been very successful with penny stocks and seen 10 bag of penny stocks within the ISA. Of course, you've got that marvelous tax wrapper, so it's tax free money. That's I think everyone's pipe dream. If you can sort of turn your 20 grand. Investment allocation per annum, or it might have gone up a bit now actually, but if you can turn that into a 10 bagger, then that's a very nice return indeed. And I know one or two people that have done that.
Yeah, exactly. And definitely always, I always tell people when starting off, always have an ISA, always start a nice take out your tax allowance there, because you never know, you could have the next Apple, next Facebook in your hand sometime, and you imagine how much tax you'd have to pay if you didn't have it in ISA. So always take up that that part of it. And let's be honest, it's taxed at every other level in any walk of life. On your income, if you buy a car, you tax on the car, there's tax on the petrol. You go on toll roads, there's tax. There's tax everywhere, at every level. If you buy a house, you sell a house, capitalist gains tax, inheritance tax. They get you everywhere, don't they? Tax somebody, something, it's nice to have an area where you can make an investment and it not be taxable,
Well, as I say, there are only two things certainly in life, death and taxes, that's and that is so true, And we are taxed every which way at every level. So this is a genuine tax, genuine tax haven. And as an investor, you have to use it, you're crazy not to.
I wonder what the efficiency is of the government tax. What's the return on investment for the tax they get the return they get. I would like to see how much. It's probably some long-winded, honest article on it, but how much you actually spend on admin and all that stuff, and you know, and is wasted money pretty much on costs that are not needed, you know.
Oh God, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's
how efficient is the government with our tax money? That's what I'm trying to say, you know.
Yeah. I think probably some departments are efficient. Some departments are probably creaking and dreadfully inefficient. And a lot of the money gets spent on unnecessary projects. And I think the PPE contracts is a classic case in point. You know, it's jobs for the boys, isn't it? You know, so many of them are passed to companies. People saw an opportunity. Oh yeah, I'll set up a company manufacturing PPE and I'll tender for the contract. And hey presto, you know, okay, great, we've got $1 million, now let's go and find someone to build them. And that's where it's inefficient.
Yeah, well, stuff. Al, thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Jess. Speak to you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Draper Spirit PLC, down just under 1% to 833. At four, Oriole Resources, down 10%, 0.675. At two, Tirupati Graphite, up 10% to 135.5. At two, Challenger Energy, non-mover, 2.7. And at one, Mode Global Holdings. Of course, a bit of a bounce there in Bitcoin. Hoping to get back above that $40,000 level. It's a resistance point. We'll see if it happens. Okay, time for the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Tomco Energy, Greenfield update. At four, Oriole Resources, Bibembe delivers high-grade intersections. At three, Helium One Global, commencement of drilling. At two, Mode Global Holdings, Mode partners with THG PLC for payments launch. And at one, Open Orphan, redistribution in specky of notice results as well. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.